Welcome to another exciting episode of the Path to Meaningless podcast. I am Ryan Fellman, joined here with Joe Hart. Average is the enemy. The art of flipping. I think most people know you pretty well, but why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself to the few people who may not have heard of you yet?
Yeah, man, for sure. Just want to say thanks for having me on. But I'm Joe. I'm just an average turned savage Joe, and. I coach competitive cheer. Been doing that for about 10 years. About 15, 16 months ago, decided that it was time to make some changes in my life. And felt like I did a complete 180, going from debt and being unhappy to, you know, no longer having that debt and, you know, promoting a message of positivity and side hustle and whatever else is on my mind, whether people like it or not. So that's me.
That's awesome.
Me in a nutshell.
So I was talking to my girlfriend last night. I'm like, hey, I got a podcast in the morning. She's like, oh, cool. Who are you doing it with? I'm like, it's Coach Joe Hart. She's like, well, what's he coach? I'm like, cheerleading. She goes, really? That's different. I'm like, yeah, no, it's awesome. It's really cool, actually. And I was telling her how I've been following you for a long time. Like, I don't even remember. You probably like 1 or 2,000 followers when I first found you.
Yeah. So yeah, I think I started following you when you had
yeah.
I don't know.
It was a while ago. I remember.
But it was when you were. It was at the time when you were following more people than were following you.
Yeah. I did the follow back thing for a while because I wanted to like follow everyone that was interested in, you know, following me. It felt like the right thing to do for a while, but it got to a point where I'm like, I don't even know who some of these people are.
Exactly.
There were days where I couldn't even like I couldn't even click fast enough to keep up with people. So that was a fool's errand. So
yeah,
the fallback thing works until around 1,000, then you got to give it up. But yeah, I was telling her how it was neat to watch your transition, because you really have changed a lot in a short time, like a year. I mean,
right.
Your face looks different. You've gotten stronger. You've gotten your message across much more cohesively. It's been really neat to watch somebody actually go through the process versus like stumbling on somebody who's already done it, you know?
Right.
My problem is when I see a guy that's like just jacked and like shredded and already rich, you know, like an Andrew Tate or like a Zuby even, you know, I kind of look at him and I'm like, maybe they were just born that way. But when you see somebody actually transition, it's more encouraging, you know?
Yeah.
So,
well, that's the thing with social media, and we can dig into it later, but you get bombarded with all this information, and you know, it doesn't even matter if it's from a fitness standpoint, it can be from a fitness standpoint, it could be financial or whatever. But you typically just see people's results. You don't see the process as much as you need to, especially on like Instagram and stuff like that. So I try to, you know, along the way, I tried to talk about what I was doing and not just here's where I'm starting at and then come back 6 months, a year later and say, this is where I'm at now.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it gets a bad rep sometimes. I've seen people kind of dog it where it's like, no, go out and do whatever it is you're going to do and become a success and then talk about it. It's like, I think it's more interesting to document the process, because there's been things that I've done a very good job of documenting as I've gone along. And then there's things that I haven't paid attention to. And it's a lot harder to go back and think about what you did to change versus to document it like as you're going through it. Because, you know, I look back on like, you know, my writing process, which it's documenting as I was writing. So that's really easy. I can scroll through old notebooks. I can find where my head's at. And there's pages I read and it's like somebody else wrote them. Like I don't fully remember or even necessarily resonate with the message I was talking about because I've changed. But then there's like other things like how I tackled my debt. We kind of both share that. And, you know, I know how I did it. I could probably explain it to some people, but like a lot of the details about how I went through it are kind of lost on me because I don't remember.
You know? Yeah, it's when someone asked me like what I did. Now, I think you had more debt than I did. I had something like, I don't know, 7, 8, 9K on a credit card. And I was like, I was pissed I let myself get into this situation. But it was that whole Tet thing. It was a weird, it was just a weird 4 or 5 months because I was like, all right, I got to make more money somehow because cutting expenses ain't going to do it.
Yeah.
You know, you can nickel and dime all you want. You can Dave Ramsey all you want. Until you make more money per month, that debt's not going to get paid down any faster.
Yeah,
I mean, absolutely. A little bit faster if you cut out, you know, your Netflix or your cable, but, you know, $100 or $150 on $9,000, it's not that much.
Yeah, and, especially if you're paying interest on it, like, what, 20%? I mean,
yeah.
Sometimes the interest alone is hard to keep up with, so I completely get it.
And I could just remember thinking, okay, if I can work 5 extra hours at my job on a Saturday, that gives me X amount of dollars, which I can put towards that. And I almost got excited to put money towards it. I almost felt like I fully immersed myself into this whole debt-free process. And, you know, at certain times you're like, man, I'm about to drop $2,000 on this payment so I can get it paid, or about to drop $1,000 this week. It sucked, but it was great at the same time because as you made that payment, watching it come down, and you're like, all right, I'm ahead of schedule because my goal was to pay it off by end of December, and I paid it off at the end of October.
That's awesome.
It was just fun to watch. And I know, like, my debt isn't as big as – there's plenty of other people who have way more debt. And right now, like, we're currently working on getting my wife's student loans paid off, which we're getting there on there and our car loan.
Yeah. So. I think everyone gets really upset about the student loan thing. That one doesn't concern me as much as, like, credit card debt. Because credit card debt is typically 20 to 24% interest rate, whereas, like, student loans are, like, somewhere in the neighborhood of, like, 4 to 9%. You know, it's a much more manageable number. It's a big balance usually, which makes it tough. But, you know, I've seen some people – you know, knock out some pretty big debt numbers, whereas, like, it's a lot harder to go after that credit card because the interest keeps eating away.
And that's where people are, you know, I'm not a financial expert.
Right.
I don't think I'll ever consider myself one. I just know what I've gone through and observe what other people gone through. Is people don't realize, you know, it's fine to use credit cards if you know how to use them properly. It's not a big deal. I mean, I'm debt-free personally. I still use credit card to acquire points or cash back. You know, I'll still put a couple bills on it just so I can use it for the points. But the problem is when people, you know, I think I tweeted out yesterday, credit cards kind of allowed the person to appear rich without actually being rich. And, you know, people, it's just mindset. There's a study done. I don't know when, I can't tell you when, but it was about gambling. And it was when people are more likely to spend more money when they have chips in front of them than if it was actual dollars. So if you're sitting at a blackjack table and you had $100, let's say in $10 bills, and then you had $100 in chips and $10 chips, you're more likely to spend more in the chips because you don't have that connection with the actual dollar amount and the chips. It's just plastic or metal chips compared to when you have to physically put in cash that you earned when you're betting. People are more are less likely to take a bigger risk. And so it's the same thing with a credit card. You don't think about, oh, I can just charge it. It's not a big deal.
Yeah.
You know, exactly. It's not physically handing over cash to someone.
Yeah. I've gotten to a point where sometimes I don't even look at the number, you know, like, especially with groceries, I just swipe. I don't even pay attention to what it is. But that's, you know, something I'm going to buy anyway. But
right.
The mindset of that credit card thing is very, very accurate. Yeah. Credit cards are interesting because economically or mathematically, they make a lot of sense. I love using them because in the past, instead of getting a loan, I've done the 0% interest thing for 12 months, and it worked out for me well. And then I paid it off later. That's kind of how I got into that debt.
Yeah.
Which was good because that debt that I had was pretty high. I paid somewhere in the neighborhood of like $500 in interest total. I paid almost all of it off before it started racking up. So that can be useful. You get the points, the airline. Also, I just had my card hacked recently, and instead of like freaking out about losing the money, I just called the credit card company up. They cancel the card, they reimburse you for the charges, and they look into, you know, whatever happened. Which, you know, it's just one more step to protect yourself. But then there's the psychological aspect of the credit card, like where you're talking about, where you can spend money that you don't have. It's easier to spend money. And a lot of people do get stuck in that trap of, you know, not being able to manage a credit card correctly. So it's tough. Like I like to tell people, like, you know, go get a credit card you need to build your credit up, and then put your Netflix bill on it and take the card and like put it in a gun safe or bury it in the can outside. I mean, just get it where you can easily use it. But that was like one of my big personal finance mistakes, which is such a benign one, but I only had one credit card for like years. So now, even though I'm 32, my age of credit is only 3 years.
Right.
Right. So credit's such a strange thing. Most people don't understand it. And it doesn't even make sense. Like there's things you can do that would be like the correct thing to do, like financially, but it might hurt your credit, you know?
Right.
They actually want you to rack up a lot of debt and then pay it off. That's better than not having debt at all.
Yeah, no, that's the thing that I can't stand about credit. That's the one thing. Like I used to, we used to work in insurance. I used to work in insurance. I was an underwriter, and there is a, where we run people's credit scores because it's been associated with people with a higher credit score are safer drivers. There's some type of correlation there because it means I don't know how accurate that is, but it wasn't like a major factor to decide if we were going to accept the application or not, but there was a correlation between people with lower credit scores and their loss ratio, how many accidents they got into, you know, typically shows some type of, you know, fiscal responsibility, in a sense, which I can understand. But sometimes we would get people whose like credit score was like super low but they didn't have anything on their driving record. And it's these people, you know, that pay everything in cash, which is cool. And so I agree that if you can pay off, you know, your stuff in increments and your credit score should be able to go up because it shows you're consistent. But the one thing I hate is people who pay cash all the time get screwed on that. It's like, well, they're not being irresponsible. They just literally pay everything right then and there.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's so wrong. I mean, there's a pretty quick fix to all that. You know, instead of like paying cash for the car, put the car down on a loan and then just pay it off like 30 days later.
Right.
You know, there's nothing wrong with doing that. But then there's people that don't trust banks, which I think those people are becoming harder to come by. But I've run into that too. And then they struggle to get a loan. It's such a strange thing. And I don't know.
Well, if they struggle to get a loan, I think car loan is one of the easiest thing you can get. Car loans are like, you know, obviously a mortgage is going to be different, but like a car loan, like I know some people that have no business getting a new car and getting a car loan. Like, I'm like, wow, I can't believe the bank lent you that money. But they go get one, they got like a 525 credit score or whatever, and they can go get one.
Well, some of those terms get pretty creative too, because you know these people that can get a car loan don't get like the best deal. So instead of the 0% that you hear about so much, which even that's gone away pretty much now, they're paying like 8, 9, 10, 12% on these car loans. And for 72 months, 84 months, 96 months. I've seen 96 month terms, which is insane.
The problem is, and this goes with the whole financial literacy thing, people don't understand, you know, I think everyone's definition of affordability is different, but when people look at a larger purchase, they just look at the monthly payment. That's it. Can I afford the monthly payment? They don't look at the overall cost. Like, you know, okay, I'm going to buy this car for 20 grand at a 5% interest rate for however many years. They see, oh, it's going to cost me, I don't know, $350 a month.
Right.
What they don't see is, oh, this is actually going to cost me $27,000 or whatever, you know, $25,000, $26,000 total. And, you know, that's where people got to educate people.
Yeah. And I made that mistake when I was young because, you know, I went to school and I didn't have a car and I didn't need a car, which actually was kind of great. I got to walk around everywhere. But I love cars and I wanted one really bad. So
I couldn't tell by your profile.
Yeah, guilty. So as soon as I graduated, for those that have only recently followed me, my profile picture used to be a car. But anyway, so as soon as I graduated, I got a really good job, and I went out and bought a brand new car, which in hindsight, it wasn't the worst decision because the thing is still driving today. I had it for like 7 years, and I ended up giving it to my ex-wife in the divorce, and I assume she's still driving. I don't know. But it was in great shape, 160,000 miles later, and hardly anything went wrong with it. But at the same time, I was paying, I think, like $480 a month on it.
Oh,
yeah.
And that hurts.
I could afford it. I was living alone. But I look back on it, I'm like, man, if I'd have bought something for like $10,000, I could have paid it off. I could have paid off half of it that day that I got my first job, and then I could have paid the rest of it off within a year, and then all those months I could have been putting $480 into like an investment account, and you know, just 10 years later you just think back to these things and it's like, if I wasn't just a dumb drunk college kid.
Yeah, no, for sure.
Yeah, I recently was reading this blog, Financial Samurai, and he's got like a specific equation of like how much you can afford for a car, and his is aggressive. I've never seen someone this aggressive, but he was saying like you should spend 5% of your yearly salary on a car, meaning if you make $50,000, you should buy a $2,500 car, which I think is a little extreme.
It is, but it's almost like,
I like the idea of it.
That's like, I like the idea of that.
I think maybe 10 to 15%, at least in those lower numbers, because like $2,500 car is rough.
Right. That's a beater.
Yeah.
Well, not a beater. It's probably, I'm getting ready to sell my Honda Accord. I've had it for, since 2010. It's an 09. It's got about 190,000 on it. Yeah. I could probably get about 2K for it. So maybe someone could buy.
Yeah, I mean,
I like the idea. It's a good idea. I think it's more from the point that people are just consistently screwing themselves by getting themselves in so much debt. So, like, if they spent, but the problem is they got to have that 5 or 10% or 15%. Yeah. I think if they're going to, I wonder if, you know, on that equation, if it's based on monthly payments or is that what they should have to be able to pay right away?
Yeah. I think it was 5% of your monthly income was the way he actually put it. So it would be based on the monthly payment.
Okay.
Yeah. So I guess that's kind of reasonable. I mean, even when I bought my car, that first one, it wasn't like an astronomical amount compared to what I was making. So I was okay. But it's just cars are, they're fun, but it's just such a, you just lose so much money on them.
And, it is. I just recently bought an Audi off my dad. And I like it. Don't get me wrong. It's nice. It's fast. And the excitement, you know, you have it for the first month and you're like, hell yeah. And then you're kind of like, eh, it's just a car. That's what, you know, so like having a nice car has never been like my type of interest.
Yeah, I get
like
that.
For some people, like you like cars. So that's, I mean, don't get me wrong. Like, you know, my grandfather used to have a Corvette and a Jag and stuff like that. So that was fun to drive, but I'm not like a car guy. So I'm like, as long as it gets me to A to B and then sometimes C, I'm cool. You know,
I'm lucky in that I'm not obsessed with like the fancy rich. Like I don't need a brand new Porsche 911. I'm more of like, I'd like to have, you know, a 1975 Corvette or like the Smokey and the Bandit car. Someday I'm going to buy one of those and maybe I'm going to sell it in a year, but like, I want to have one at least for a little while. So,
right.
Yeah. Now what other, you know, like financial traps do people fall in? I think it's fascinating and I've always been obsessed with this and I've avoided most of them, but I've fallen into a couple. I think everyone does.
Yeah. I think, now I haven't bought a house. We currently rent a small two-bedroom house now because we're going to move back down south eventually, buy some land in the mountains somewhere.
Yeah,
and do it that way. I'm not buying a house in Jersey. the taxes here are insane.
Yeah.
But I think almost kind of like a car loan, you know, people will go buy a house. And I don't think there's anything wrong with buying a house, but what they – you know, the interest rate seems low, but on a 30-year mortgage, like I actually did the calculations on the house across the street. I think when this guy bought it, not super nice guy, I think the house was, I don't know, 280, 300K.
Okay.
And I did the calculations at the current of with his taxes he pays per year and what about an interest rate could potentially be. And he would end up paying double for what the price is. So say it was a $300,000 house, he would pay almost $600,000 because of taxes too. I mean, taxes are $7,000 on his house a year. Okay. I think that's something, especially in areas where the taxes are high, people don't pay attention to.
Hidden
costs on the taxes, or they put their taxes in with their mortgage, which I think is the stupidest thing.
Why is that? Why is it the stupidest thing?
Because you're paying interest on that way. You can just pay it all at the same time.
Yeah.
So I got my mom to get off that. I was like, Mom, did you do this? And she's like, yeah. And I was like, Mom, I know your taxes ain't that much on the house, but don't do that. It's just, even if it's extra $10, $15. And then the only other thing that I've noticed is, you know, my dad taught me this. My dad paid his house off like 10 years early on a 30-year mortgage just by, he would pay his mortgage and then he would add the principal for the next month, each month.
Wow.
So you save a ton, because all your interest is front loaded typically on the first 15 years or 10 or whatever it may be. So he saved a ton of interest and that ended up saving, you know, he paid his house off 10 years early.
Yeah. I'm slowly kind of working towards that. Cause I got lucky in that I found a house that I really liked in the area that's not expensive. So it's a little below my budget. And I don't do this every month, but if I have like a good month, I'm making decent money. I throw an extra 200, 400, 500 bucks, whatever I feel like throwing in there. And it's stunning what that does. Cause like if you got a, like we said, like a $300,000 house, like what's your mortgage on that going to be? Like $1,500 or something?
Probably.
Yeah. But those like first couple of years, you're paying like $1,200 in interest. So if you put an extra $300, it's basically an extra month you're paying in. So,
yeah. That's what, you know, and like I said, I'm not an expert on mortgages or anything like that. This is just stuff that I've learned. I've done my own research on and I've talked to other people about.
Yeah.
I've
owned a house for a few years, so I've seen it in action, and it makes a big difference.
I just think that the people, like, who are, like, if you can afford it and you want to buy a house, I have, like I said, nothing against it. Like, I can't wait to buy a house one day. It's just not for me where I am right now.
Yeah, no, I think some guys rush into it a little bit. If you're not going to live there for, like, 5-10 years, it's probably not worth doing. But, and I've gone against that. This is my third house in, like, 9 years or 7 years or something like that. And I've gotten lucky in that I've made money on every house, but the housing market's always gone up. You know, so it's not like I was smart or flipped them or anything. It just the market kept moving up. But closing costs have kind of eaten some money.
That's what people are saying. You know, people, you know, my age or even younger, or sometimes older, they're like, if you buy a house, it's a guaranteed investment. I'm like, I'm not going to say your house is your investment because that goes against what I believe. I think it's something that you can put equity into.
Right.
But In a sense, like the guy across the street, let's say he pays his house off. I'm not sure how long he's been living there. The house cost him initially about $300K. He's got to sell it for $650,000 for him to actually make money. Otherwise, he just breaks even. And that's something that people don't realize. They're like, oh, but I sold my house for $50,000 more than I bought it for. I'm like, I wonder how much interest you paid on that.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
That's something that, you know, I understand people's thinking because they see other people become, you know, 90% of millionaires become millionaires, I think, in the U.S. from real estate. So they think real estate and they think, oh, my house. And that's not really how it's done, but it is what it is.
That's so crazy. Yeah, it's just, there's a lot of risk in that too, especially when you get into those like higher expense house. There's a house down the road from me. It's a much nicer house than mine. I think it's selling for like $2 million and like they can't sell it. It looks like it was built in the 80s. It's a really nice house, but it's like 30 years old and there's nothing wrong with it. But like if I'm buying a $2 million house, I'm going to make it the way I want to make it. And it's going to be modern. It's not going to look like Scarface, you know?
Right. Now there's, land and stuff is so expensive up here. And, you know, occasionally browse like Zillow and all the other sites down in actually in Tennessee and the Carolinas and Georgia. And, you know, I'm just looking at land and I'm like, for the price of 1 acre up here, I could get 10 down there.
Yeah. So. And a lot of them do sell that way. Like in my neighborhood, like it's only 5 acres and above. So like everyone's spread out. It's awesome. It's a really neat way to live. I go back and forth on this because I've done both of this. So when I was younger and I lived alone, I loved living downtown. Like I try to live like around college campuses because I would basically drive to work and back. And other than that, I didn't need a car. I could walk to the bank. I could walk to the post office. I could walk to the gym. I could walk to Buffalo Wild Wings and drink too many beers and come back. And like as a young, dumb kid, it's like really nice to just walk everywhere. Plus, you know, when you're eating like shit, you need to be able to keep active and kind of forces you to. And I missed that part of it, so I don't have that anymore. But I know that when I was living that way, I wished I lived out in the woods where I could get a dog and let him run free and go out in the yard. So I think it's best to kind of live where all the fun stuff is and where all the young people are out doing stuff so you meet interesting people. And as you get older and settle down and have a family, then that's the time to get the house with the land.
No, that's it's funny. I kind of thought the same thing. I grew up in a suburb of Atlanta, so I was constantly around people, you know. Then I went to college in Dayton, Ohio, which is just a college town. So I met interesting people there. Then I lived in Florida and then, you know, moved up here. But each day that goes by, I'm like, I can't, you know, what I'm constantly working towards is putting as much money aside for one, whenever the next recession is going to happen. Cause call it, it's going to be buying season. I can't wait. I know some people, it's going to hurt some people.
Right.
But I'm personally excited.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, as a young guy, I'm like dying for this. Cause like I keep throwing money to the stock market and it's like, I know I'm throwing money in when it's going to crash, but it keeps going up in the meantime.
And
it's worth doing anyway. But yeah, at some point it's got to crash.
Yeah. But so between that and I'm just like, I can't wait to buy some land and be away from everyone.
Yeah. You're right.
It's just nothing against anyone, but like, I can't, like right now when I drive to go coach, it's about a 40-minute drive. And it's just because I have to take all these slow roads with a bunch of traffic. And I'm like, this is just.
Stay away from Nashville then. It's getting crazy busy.
Nash Vegas is crazy.
It's nuts. Chattanooga's a lot more like tame. It's kind of the same. It's not like the country music scene. It's more of like it's a really active area. Like you go out there on a Saturday morning, like everyone's like riding their bikes or they have this building you can like climb on the wall. It's like a rock climbing store. There's just everyone's out doing stuff. It's really neat. It's on the river too. So Coach Joe, how'd you get into cheerleading of all things?
This is an interesting story. So I never cheered in college. I was a baseball guy. Baseball was my thing. Yeah, baseball was my thing. I was good at it. I ended up stopped playing because I just didn't love it anymore.
Yeah.
Kind of wonder what would have happened if I kept playing, but it is what it is. I talked to a few colleges, but I stopped playing. I was like, I wanted to work, which stupid me.
But you probably did the right thing. I got some friends that maybe they weren't as good as you, but they played baseball in college and they probably didn't go to as good of a college they could have if they wanted to like just make money, but they wanted to play baseball and they kind of racked up a lot of student debt and didn't get the best degree. So like, you probably made the better financial choice.
Yeah. We'll see. Who knows? And I go off to college in Ohio. I wanted to go somewhere like get out of the state, just experience something new. So they had this day within the first week or two of semester starting where all the student clubs and organizations are out on one of the fields by one of the cafeterias or whatever, you know, getting people involved, getting people to, you know, whatever group it is, you know, it could be some type of community service group. It could be,
you know,
fraternities. Actually, it wasn't much fraternities and sororities doing that, but
all the student clubs and
all the student clubs.
Yeah. Intramural sports, that type of
thing. So, the cheerleaders were out there and, I actually wasn't down there at the time. A guy I'd met that was on the floor. He called me, he goes, "Hey dude, like, I think I'm gonna try this cheerleading thing out. And I was like, all right, good for you. And he goes, you should come down here and like do it. And I was like, nah, I don't think so, bro. And he goes, the girls are attractive. And I was like, okay, well, I'll just come down and take a look.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, what can hurt?
That's how they hook you.
Yeah. So went down there, and one of the guys that was over there, he's like, you interested in doing this? And I was like, I don't think so, man. I was just a baseball guy, just kind of watching. He goes, well, you're kind of built. You'd be pretty good at it, I'm sure. And I was like, nah, I don't know about that. He goes, why don't you just come to practice one day? If you don't like it, you can leave.
Right.
And I was like, oh, whatever. The guy on my floor said he was doing it. I might as well attempt it. So I started. I can remember going to practice, and that was one of the most awkward days of my life. So I was like, this is something I have no idea about. Like, how, yeah. I'm learning how to do these toss drills. I'm learning, you know, all this other stuff. And I'm like, this is really weird, but I kind of like it because it's making me uncomfortable.
Right.
And, you know, I just stuck with it. Started to learn how to tumble. Started learning the basics of coaching actually after a year or two, which I enjoyed. And, since then, man, I've been coaching. Now I'm on like 10 years of coaching.
Wow. So, like college girls that you're, or people that you're coaching?
So I was coaching. I wasn't coaching college. Occasionally I get a college athlete or someone's going off to college. Right now, most of the people I coach are middle school, high school.
Awesome.
But I do, I'm the tumble director at the gym. Yeah. So I work with kids from typically 5 to 18.
Yeah.
I coach one team. Most of them are in high school. A few of them are like seventh or eighth grade. But I work with all the teams there, in one way or another. So it's weird how that transformed from like me making just this little decision, like, no, let me try it out, to like something that like I love doing.
Yeah, no, I get that. It's funny how one little decision can kind of snowball into something, and then you look back at it a year or two later and you're like, I guess this is part of my life now.
Yeah.
I recently got my kid into karate, and you know, it was one of those things where I thought he needed some discipline and some structure in his life. And I did that growing up, and I thought it made me a lot more disciplined, and it taught me like how if you work towards something, you got rewarded for it, right? So I throw him in the class. I'm sitting there watching. And then I decided to start taking the class with him too, because I want to get back in shape. I'm like, this would be a fun thing to do every week. And a few months later, the instructor, the sensei, whatever you want to call him, he asked me if I want to be like an assistant to help coach the kids or whatever in the class. I'm like, yeah, sure. Why not? So I just went to like one of their meetings or whatever. And I've been doing that for like a year now. And it's just one of those things where I'm like, I don't even remember thinking much about whether I should do this or not. I kind of just gave it a shot. And like now it's, I mean, I thoroughly enjoy like going to it. I look forward to it. I know I would say like 90% of the kids' names. And man, I never thought I'd be the guy saying this, but it's so fun and it's so gratifying to like work with, you know, kids and teaching them how to play a sport, and it's they're funny, they're energetic, they yeah. keep you young, man.
It's yeah, it's got to be one of the biggest blessings in my life, because, you know, we're there as coaches. We're there for not just from a coaching standpoint. We're not there. Obviously the goal is to win. I know people say winning isn't everything, but like these kids want to win. And when you create that passion for them and they want to win, that's when the magic happens.
Yeah.
Okay. Cause if you don't want to win, if you just want to have fun, it seems kind of, I mean, it's good to have fun. We have fun, but it's a lot more fun winning than it is a lot more fun than.
Yeah. Losing. Well, I think what's important isn't whether you win or lose, it's that wanting to win, and then what right. you do to make that happen. That's what really matters.
Yeah,
you
know? where the hard work and dedication and the yeah. consistency come in. So, you know, we're trying to coach these athletes to the best of our ability and to get them to the best of their physical ability.
Yeah,
while building mental strongness and yeah. getting physically stronger. But the also thing is, you know, sometimes these kids come from homes that are broken, maybe single parent homes. Sometimes maybe the parents aren't involved at all. Maybe they lost, you know, a brother, a grandfather, you know, whatever it may be. And so you end up being a parental figure sometimes, in a sense, yeah, even though you're not their parent. And so you end up being a role model. And it's funny, like the whole average is the enemy thing. I got kids come up to me. They're like, "Hey, Coach Joe." And I'm like, "What?" They're like, "Average is the enemy." And I'm like, "That's awesome." Yeah. You know what I'm saying? And, and it's just, I don't know, it's just fulfilling because, you know, you can make this positive. I get the chance to make a positive impact on a daily basis just by coaching the youth of our generation. And it's like, it gets me pumped, man. It's, you know, there's some days that are better than others. Sometimes a kid will really piss me off, but you know, it is what it is. I mean, that's every single day, but like collectively, like getting to work with, you know, these kids who are happy and excited and motivated and who are just willing to grind and, you know, put themselves out there. Like that to me is what's really exciting. And I just can't see myself stopping.
No, I completely get that. The thing that really gets me is like, it's funny. I always think of Fight Club whenever I talk about this, which is weird, but there's that line of Fight Club where it's like, when I started, I was like a lump of clay, and then by the time, you know, after 90 days or whatever, I was like chiseled rock, you know. And you can see these kids come in, and like I had the same thing. I went into this class like 2 years ago and I was like 215 pounds maybe, and now I'm like 190, but like a lot stronger too. So I've probably lost like 35 pounds really, and I felt that same way. I'm like, wow, it's been cool watching this transition, getting like stronger and more disciplined. But you see it with these kids too. Some of these kids come in, they're goofy, they don't listen well, they kind of have their head slumped down a little bit, and you can see their confidence build as they get more confident. Yep. You see them, you know, get a little more energetic, they start getting more comfortable being around you and the other kids, and suddenly they're coming out of their shells. And just watching that progression, it's kind of mind-blowing because it happens fast. I mean, it can happen in like 30 days sometimes.
Yeah.
It's really cool. That's awesome, man. So you said 10 years you've been coaching?
Yeah, 10 years.
Pretty much since college, right?
Yeah, I believe I started to learn how to coach the basics when I was a sophomore.
That's incredible, man. Did you read any books or anything? Like anything on like child psychology or just coaching in general?
No, I really actually didn't. I read a few blogs and articles here and there. But honestly, it was really getting the hands-on, like just, and I would go to conferences. I still go to conferences. Like we try to do one once a year. And you know, there's a ton of apps and that's what's great about social media. I follow a couple people like on Instagram, just for their tumbling drills, because they got these great drills for, doesn't matter if it's like a level one athlete or a level five athlete. I'm like, I'm going to do that in class tonight. Like, that's what social media has really opened up. It gives you the ability to, in whatever you're doing, whether it's coaching, whether you're trying to, you know, start a brand, whatever it may be, start a blog, it gives you access to all this information that can help you. The thing is just people don't take advantage because they're like, it's free. It'll be there when I want it.
Yeah.
Can we say there's no opportunity when there's so much opportunity?
Well, why do you think it is that people don't start? I saw you said that somewhere. You said, you know, I forget exactly what you said. I thought I wrote it down, maybe I didn't. Well, people's biggest problem is that they don't start.
Yeah. I don't know. There could be a couple things. Like for me, you know, there was times in my life where I'm like, I need to make a change. I need to make a change. I need to make a change. And part of that could have been a procrastination thing, which probably that played a role. Another thing was sometimes when you know it doesn't cost you anything to change, you have nothing to really, you have no investment in that.
Right.
And so that could play a role. And sometimes you just need to see other people making changes consistently.
Yeah.
And that kind of puts a fire in your ass. And that's something that happened. You know, I think everyone's different. Some people don't need like this. I don't need to see a people get motivated by different things. Sometimes people have this internal motivation, so they just get up and get to it. I don't think everyone's born with that. I think you can create it out of habit and consistency. But then some people really, like, you know, I was at the point where I was like, okay, I'm seeing this person do this. I'm seeing this person grow their followers by this. I'm seeing, you know, X, Y, and Z. And I'm like, I could do the same thing, but I have to, like, actually just start. And start. So
it's hard. I had a hard time. I obsessed over the idea of passive income for like years. And there were so many, like, it's hard to say excuses, because they felt like valid reasons, and maybe they were, maybe they were excuses, but, you know, I would see somebody's course that they were selling, and I'd be like, you know what, this is probably a scam, or this is probably not worth my time, or, and you hear all these people say it all the time, and I kept thinking that, and then I don't want to say what course I bought, because I'm not really going to brag about it, but I bought a course, and it's not really somebody I talk about much, but I was going through the course, and I found some info in it that kind of helped me, and it pointed me in the right direction. But then as I was reading it, I was thinking, I can do better than this. And right. Instead of, like, bitching at the guy or saying it was a bad course, I went out and made my own. And then I started doing this whole thing. And God, I mean, I really had no idea where this was going to go. I kind of just started playing around, and it blew up very quickly. And at first I was kind of just joking around, having fun, but it got a little bit more serious when people started messaging me saying, like, hey, you inspire me and you really helped me out with stuff like this. And, you know, it took me to a different level. But I mean, I spent years thinking about it. Just like, I was afraid of not being good enough. I was afraid that I didn't learn enough. I definitely had that paralysis by analysis, where I wanted to make sure I had, like, my ducks in a row. And I should have known this too, because, so anyway, I learned more in 90 days of actually doing it than I did in all those years of watching other people do it. And I should have known that, because, and I said this a million times in real life to my friends and family, but I always thought that I learned more in 90 days of my first job than I did in 4 years of schooling.
Yeah.
The takeaway there is obvious. It's just, you got to get out there and you just got to do it. And don't be afraid to fail.
Yeah. I think people are scared of failing, which is understandable. No one likes to fail.
That sucks.
But I think the people who are really scared of failing are the ones who judge other people based on their failures.
Right.
So, like, if they fail, then they know that other people are going to talk shit to them or about them. But, you know, there's so many different things that come into play. This comes from a mentally strong standpoint, and, you know, having a routine at times. But yeah, like you were saying, if you can just actually say, you know what, I've put this off long enough, let me just watch one YouTube video, and let me try to start a website, whatever it is, whatever you make, maybe I will start a podcast, maybe I get no fault. That's how this whole course thing for me started. Yeah. Like, I was doing this on the side to help pay off my debt. And then I realized, okay, well, no one's really talking about on this side of Twitter. Everyone's talking about brands and copywriting and stuff, but Maybe I'll just put this little poll out here and see what happens. And, you know, I ran the poll, and 80% of people said, yeah, they'd be interested. And I was like, well, shit, I guess I got to do this now.
Yeah, you know? No, that's smart. You know,
I wish I didn't necessarily need the poll, because some people said just build it and they will come. I'm glad I ran the poll. Is more a little bit of self-confidence, but anything I do now, I don't run a poll.
I think it's a good idea to put some kind of a feeler out there. I've never thought about running a poll. Jose Rosado's idea is that you put the course up for pre-order, and, like, if you pre-orders, you start writing. If not, you don't.
Yeah, no, I think that's good too. But I think
you have to write something first, just so you know, like, what you're capable of. Like, I know how long it would take me to write a good ebook, but, like, when I wrote my first one, it seemed like an insurmountable task to me. I didn't understand, like, what was involved in it. But now it's, you know, it's just second nature. I can do
right. So it was something that, you know, I did mine video based because I felt like I could speak better than I can write for the most part. So, you know, going through this whole process, I didn't want to, plus it was a little bit of laziness. I didn't want to type it all out. Like, you know, I talk faster than I type. So
it's perfect though, because most people don't want to read. They want to watch.
Yeah, most people. Yeah. So, you know, video content has kind of become king.
Yeah, I probably should invest more into video content. You know, it's funny. I'm still like uncomfortable with it, even though I do like these podcasts and I talk a lot. I feel weird on camera. I don't know why that is. I think I just need to do it more.
That's part of the reason why I started the whole car chat squad thing.
Yeah.
You know, when I started to go through this psychological and physical and mental change, I was like, you know, maybe one day I want to speak in front of people, like not like kids I coach, but like maybe 50 people somewhere, maybe at an event. I'm not going to say like a motivational speaker, but maybe I just want to speak.
Well, you could do that. You could definitely go in front of like a graduating class of high school kids and just explain to them, you know, Joe Hart's facts of life.
Yeah, I know. Average is savage. This is how it's done. But I was like, I got to get more comfortable speaking to an audience I can't see.
Okay.
And so I started doing these car chat squad videos, you know, 2 minutes, you know, I would park, whether it was outside the Starbucks I was getting coffee at or right before I get to work. And I would just think of a topic I would talk about and I would do it. And I go back to those and I think about and I listen to how horrible I sounded as far as a flow goes, because I used to stutter and say so much. And I'm not perfect. I still stutter a little bit. I still say on occasion, but my flow has gotten better. It's just from me doing that stupid 2-minute video every single day. And for me, did I want people to see it? Sure. But at the same time, I was doing it more for me and as a reminder for myself and what maybe I needed to hear for the day. Yeah. And it was the same way with the course. I started, you know, like Jose was saying, like he does a pre-order. I wanted to go all in. So if not one course sold, I still learned how to do it.
Yeah. I like that idea.
So it was going to be a win-win. Would I have been disappointed if one didn't sell? Probably. But either way, I went through the process. I know what I can do better, and that's what I'm constantly working at for whatever I decide to release next. And it's blown up. It's blown my mind what that thing has done.
Yeah, it's amazing what happens when you have an offer. There's some people out there that they've gotten like addicted to the dopamine and they just keep, you know, growing and growing, but they aren't selling anything. And you don't have to sell. Maybe, you know, you've got the money, but I think there's a lot of people that are afraid they're going to put out a product and it's not going to sell. And as soon as you just get one, like all you need to do is make $1 online, it's like the greatest drug in the world. It's so addicting because you know that once you make $1, you can just scale it, you can grow it.
I was talking with someone about my first dollar made online, and it was, I think a day before Black Friday. Was it Thanksgiving Day? May have been Thanksgiving Day last year. It was an Average is the Enemy shirt, but I felt amazing because I don't shop a lot. I don't go out. I don't spend a lot of money, but when I saw the notification or the email come through and I was like, dude, I just made $15 profit off a shirt. Like, that's pretty cool. And that's when it all changed. Like I'd made a lot of changes and I was growing on social media, but I finally put that out there. And I was like, this is kind of cool.
That's really cool. Yeah.
And that was like the talk about it. And a lot of people talk about it. I know Jose talks about it. You've probably talked that first sale is like the holy crap.
It's like, it's insane. It's almost like that when you drop your coffee, like the slow motion moment, you're like world shattering, you know, I don't even remember what mine was. I'm pretty sure my first dollar would have been like an Amazon affiliate commission, which that was also kind of a neat thing to me. But then after that, I can't remember now. It was selling somebody's product probably, but I still get excited. I actually get more excited selling other people's shit than mine. Like I love when people buy my books, but Chronicles of Nate, my first podcast guest,
yep.
He has his course, Holy Shift.
Yeah.
You listen to my podcast number two, actually, but he was my first guest. I get hits on that every once in a while. Like, and I did that months ago, and it's every time I'm so happy. It's like, that's so cool. I help this guy make a sale, and I get excited for it, and it makes me feel like I can sell other people's stuff. But, you know, the trick is you got to actually believe in it. But
that's the thing, I think, you know, I kind of feel like, you know, it's exciting selling someone else's thing that you've actually gone through or been able to, like, associate for or, you know, have experience with. And I think that's the problem people make with affiliate marketing. And again, for anyone who listens to this, I'm not an expert on affiliate marketing. I just know what works for me.
I think I am now.
Yeah. I think if you don't have, unless you have a large following.
Yeah.
You have to have some type of experience and results with the actual product.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, yeah, you don't want to like fake your results. You don't want to do that because eventually all the people fake and get caught and you don't want that. We've seen it happen time from time. But you know, people who affiliate for my course, like I get excited. Like when it shows that so-and-so helped you make a sale and I'm like, dude, that's awesome. They got paid. But they're also making money because they actually bought the course and actually using it. So it's like a win-win situation for them.
Yeah.
But then, like you were saying, like I'm an affiliate for Nate's course. I'm an affiliate for Hotep Jesus's Twitter guide. And then I think one or two other things. But it's easier to sell when you have legit experience with it. Yeah. And you can say, hey, this is what's happened since I bought that, or this is why this is valuable. And that's also, you know, from the beginning, I've been trying to build up, like, this is who I am. I'm an honest person. This is what I'm going through. This day was a good day. This day was a shit day. Here's where I struggled. Here's where I'm doing better. Here's what I did. And so building that trust with your following really matters.
I think the next big trend you're gonna start seeing is people talking about their failures or their lesser days. You know, you're starting to see it a little bit where people will be like casually mention, like, look, you gotta go out there and you gotta eat clean, you gotta work out every day, but today I had six beers and watched football or whatever. You know, like people are trying to be a little bit more authentic and a little bit honest. Like, yeah, normally I write 1,000 words every day. Today I binge watch Stranger Things because I was
right.
Because I mean, everyone does it and it's okay. The problem isn't you know, having a day off here and there. The problem is that most guys are doing their day off and their cheat day every day.
Right. I think, you know, the people you know, we're talking about, I almost think it's the transition in themselves and how they're trying to grow on social media, guys and girls. Like, I can remember when I was putting out content that I thought was relevant, but it wasn't personal.
Yeah.
It was just kind of blanket. I can't remember. I'd have to go back thousands of tweets and I don't want to do that. But, you know, I can remember asking bigger accounts, hey, can you just review and tell me what you think? And I remember Tanai goes, your content's pretty decent, but you just sound timid. And I was like, that stuck with me. And I was like, I don't want to sound timid. And so I just tried to change up my style a little bit. And, you know, I still post, you know, positivity stuff, but then a lot of times, like, I just post personal stuff, not like really personal, but like, you know, this is what happened today. This is what I learned from it. And, you know, if I get engagement on that, cool. Like, but a lot of times I'm just tweeting to myself.
Yeah. That's kind of how it started with me too. And, one thing is I wasn't prepared for this, but it's motivating in a weird way, because once you've kind of built up this image, you have to maintain it. So, you know, if over the next 6 months I like stop giving a shit and put on 30 pounds and don't look like I'm actually like trying to become a better person, like, why would you listen to me?
So right.
It's become like my, you know, this is the reason to go to the gym. Now it's not the only reason. The best reason to go to the gym for me has been Spartan races and shit like that. Garrett Daly and I don't know what the fuck I was thinking on this, but Garrett Daly and I signed up for an ultra marathon in January.
Oh my God. Have fun with that.
I've never run longer than 15 miles. So like, I'm not capable of it today. which is kind of enthralling. I'm really excited. But now every weekend, I'm like, I have to get up on Saturday because it takes so long to do this run. I can't do it during the week. And I'm going to have to go out there and run for a couple of hours. And it's funny how you take on these weird challenges. And yeah, I don't know. We'll see how that goes. I'm either going to come back and I'll be honest. I'll either say this was a stupid idea. I hated almost every minute of it. Or I'm like, yeah, it was hard. It was rough, but I kind of liked it. And I'm honestly leaning towards the latter because I ran a half marathon. And even though I hated the last 3 miles, like I felt great overall. And the memory of it's perfect.
Yeah. I never was a huge runner. But like in high school, right before I went off to college, we would do like, my dad would always like to run. So we would do these 5K runs on the weekends,
yeah.
You know, every weekend or every other weekend during the summer. And I used to do the Peachtree Road Race in Atlanta, you know, the largest, world's largest 10K, you know, 100,000 people or whatever it was, 70,000, whatever. Crazy. It's insane. but I can remember I signed up to do the Thanksgiving Day half in Atlanta with my brother and my sister and my dad. And it was during my freshman year of college. And I can remember about like 6 weeks before, I'm like, you know, I was working out, but I was like, crap, man, that's coming up quick. And
yeah.
I maybe run a mile here and there. So you run a little bit, but I just ran a mile every day, just like 1 mile when I went to the gym. It wasn't like I was running 5 miles or anything like that. And I showed up and, you know, the goal was to do it under 2 hours and I forget what I did, but I know I beat that goal. I ended up spraining my foot, but I was so numb and it was so cold. I didn't feel it until I got done.
I tried to beat the 2 hour mark. I couldn't do it, but it was like raining during part of the race. My feet were all wet. It was not a good day.
the hardest part about the whole process was it wasn't even running the half marathon. It was when you get done, your legs just like completely lock out or feel like they just can't move. And then my foot started to hurt really bad. And it was the mile walk we had to the train station, which was the worst part. That was the worst.
I need to read up on this and maybe write about it. But like after the race, I just kind of stood there like against this building with all the other runners. And like I ate a bagel. I kind of just chilled out. And I'm like, I don't know what to do. Like, I can barely walk. I don't want to sit down in the car. I'm like, I'm just going to stand here for like half an hour, I guess.
Yeah.
It was kind of fun just talking to other people too. You know, it's a neat group of people when you go to races.
For sure. Yeah. And I like seeing the people on the side of the road, you know, cheering their family members on and stuff. I can remember my favorite sign was someone had a sign. It was within the last 3 miles of it and said 10K warm up, 5K run.
Yes.
And I was like, that is solid. That's a good way of thinking about it.
That's 10 amazing.
Mile warm up, 5K run. I was like, I like that.
That's awesome, man. Yeah, I hated running growing up. I just did it because I was in sports and I was going to have to run at practice and I wanted to get in like halfway decent shape and stuff. But like, I remember thinking a mile was a long run. Like,
right.
I remember just dreading running a mile. And now like, I laugh at it, but like in the back of my mind, I remember, I'm like, that was very hard for me for most of my life.
Mm-hmm.
And it's funny. It's just, it's like all the other things we're talking about. You start doing it and doing it and doing it and eventually it just becomes second nature. And then you're running 2 miles and 3 miles and then you go psychopath and decide to run an ultra one day. So that's, I don't know.
Yeah. I got up to a half and I think that's all for now I'm interested in. I'm going to cheer you on for that 100 plus or whatever, however long it's going to be.
It's going to be 31 miles, 50K. So it's barely ultra, but man. But I think the happy place for most people is somewhere in that 10K to half marathon range. I think that's, for a long time, that's why I've been running every weekend, and I legitimately enjoy it. It's a great way to think, too. Like, there's times I'm out there and I have to like write down on my phone a note that will come to my mind. I'm like, I'm going to forget this if I don't write it down.
I used to do triathlons, but before I got into triathlons, I used to like cycle a lot.
Yeah.
Like, my mom was into cycling. You know, a lot of my family was into cycling. So like, I remember doing a century ride, the 100 miles.
100 miles, yeah.
So me and my mom attempted one year. I think I was 14 or 15. Okay. And it's easier to do if people know anything about cycling. They're like, oh, it's just pedaling. I'm like, there's a little more into it.
Yeah, there's a lot more to it.
But like me and my mom attempted it, and we got to 75 miles, and we had to stop because it was when it's with two people just switching back and forth for who's in front, you just get worn out, and we probably just didn't train the best. We did 75 miles, and we had to stop. The next year, we had a group of about like eight or nine, and you know, we stayed together for a while, but really that first 60 to 70 miles is, it's not that bad. You don't have to ride 60 or 70 miles to ride the 60 or 70 miles. Cause I wasn't going to spend all my Saturday riding 100 miles to train for it. You know, that last 30 was all mental.
Yeah. I think that's mostly the
point where you're like, all right, I've been on this damn bike for 3-4 hours, but you know, 4.5, my butt hurts. I'm tired of pedaling. I'm tired of the wind blowing in my face every direction I turn. Like I, you know, but finishing that, I think it ended up being like 108 miles total. And it was down in South Georgia. So it was completely flat too. So it wasn't like the most difficult century ride, but I can remember like, wow, that kind of sucked, but I'm so glad I did that. Cause I have that memory now of being able of doing that with my mom and, you know, some of her friends and, you know, it was a good time.
Yeah, some of those memories are just, it's so worth it. And once you knock out one of them, you kind of get addicted to it and you start appreciating it. But yeah, I had the same thing with the half marathon. And I trained pretty good for that one. But the first 10 miles, like, I did pretty good. And man, those last three, I was struggling. And I had my tracker going on my phone and all that stuff. So I was looking at my times and it's like first 3 miles are pretty great. Next 7 miles were good. Last three, mile 11 and 12 were kind of slowing down, getting a little rough. And mile 13 was like 20 minutes. Like I was like walking part of it. Like I tried. So I'm like, I was like, I know I'm almost at the end. I just got to keep going. But like my feet were getting blistered. They were wet. My legs just weren't like working right. It was such a strange feeling, but I got through it. But man, it's, those 3 miles are rough.
For sure.
All right, let's I want to talk a little bit about flipping. I think it's pretty interesting because you're like the only name in flipping. It's really cool. You're smart. You went into a niche that's pretty unique. I decided to go into like the most like saturated niche in the market, right? So what got you into flipping?
You know, I'd flip stuff once in a while as a kid or when I was younger, like, oh, I'll just sell this. Like, I don't need it. Make a few bucks off it. But I didn't think anything of it. But it was during this whole trying to get this debt paid off as fast as I can. And at the time, I was working in the coin industry. So I could get coins for cheaper straight from a dealer and sell them for, you know, some type of margins on sites. And I was making some money on that. And I was like, well, I gotta expand this. I don't want to just limit myself to coins because sometimes it depends on the silver and gold prices, depending on what I can get X, Y, and Z for. So I just started flipping anything I could. I started finding stuff all over the place. And, you know, sometimes I'd make an extra $50 a week here. Sometimes it would be $100 here. And then I get to the point where I'm like, oh, I'm making like an extra $500 a month or making an extra $1,000 or wow, this month is really good, you know? And then that's when this whole, you know, I was like, this was good for me because it wasn't like a get rich thing, but this was, you know, say you made $500 from it, that could pay, you know, depending on where you live, that may be for some people, if you live out in the middle of the country, that could be almost your full rent. It could be $500-$600.
Yeah.
That could be your phone bill, your electric bill, you know, your cable bill, that could be a lot of different things. And I was like, you know, is it necessarily life-changing money? Not necessarily, but it definitely helps alleviate whatever, you know, maybe you just want to save up for a vacation, you know, maybe you want to go on a dope 7-day Alaskan cruise and it's $5,000. So, you know,
whatever
it may be. And so I was like, you know, I'm looking around and I'm like, not really anyone's talking about this. Everyone's talking about brands and copywriting and affiliate marketing and stuff, which I was, you know, obviously involved in. But I was like, not everyone wants to do that. Not everyone on this side of Twitter wants to start a brand or company. Some people are happy with their job and that's fine. Some people are actually happy with what they're doing and aren't necessarily trying to get out, and good for them. And so I was like, you know what, why don't I create this, you know, show people, hey, you can make a couple extra $100, maybe you make 500 or make 1,000 or more. And so that's how this whole flipping thing kind of, you know, I created the process of what I use. It's different than other people, probably, anybody that's been doing it for a long time, but I'm adding content in the next, next week it gets added. So
you're adding more content to the course?
I'm adding more content to the course. Some commonly asked questions I get that I probably should have touched on, but I didn't think about. So I want to add that to make sure the info's in there.
I get that all the time. You write down this nice course, you think's pretty complete, and then people start asking questions like, shit, that's an obvious question. Yeah, why didn't I answer that? I either put it in a blog post later or you can add to the course too. That's a good idea.
Yeah, so I'm adding to it. I'm not going to redo the whole thing. It's just going to be more like a part two, because I just don't want to redo the whole thing. I think it's pretty concise because right now it's just under an hour. And, you know, I'll probably add 15, 20 minutes of content to it. It's not going to be, I'm not trying to take up as much time from people. I want them to get out there and start doing it. But really the goal was, you know, I want to show people what I'm doing, help them earn whatever amount they want. They can scale it to, you know, as big as they want in a sense. And, you know, I just really, this whole thing after Average the Enemy was like, money is everywhere. It doesn't matter. Yeah. There literally is money everywhere. It doesn't matter if you're flipping something, if you're affiliate marketing, if, you know, you start a side business, like you can do just about anything you want. And there's a market for just about everything.
Yeah, I dabble in a few things. I've honestly lost track. I need to like sit down one day and just put together a spreadsheet. Cause I honestly don't know where my main sources of income are, but there's so many things I'm kind of dabbling in. I don't know where everything comes from.
Right.
You know, you just got to kind of put some feelers out there and see what works.
And there's something, and you can relate to when you get the messages from people like, hey, you know, I bought your course or I bought this ebook. Yeah. And, you know, like for me, like when people ask me questions, I don't want to ever, you know, I try to answer every single DM as fast as I possibly can. I never let one go unanswered unless it's just one that just says hi. And I'm like, I'm not responding to that.
Yeah. Real quick. This is why people like us don't respond to those. We get a lot of them and 90% of them are like bullshit.
Spam.
It's spam. It's like a robot. It's a pretty picture of a girl with like 30 following and she's got like 2 followers, like obviously a fake account. So,
and created in September of 2019.
Yeah.
So no, that's why, like, if you've ever messaged any people that have a decent sized following and just say, hey, we're probably not responding unless I know it's someone that, unless I just recognize them. But, but anytime someone asks me a question about the course, something like, I get excited because it means either one, they may think this could make some type of small or big financial difference in life. 2, they've already started and they're like, hey, got through it. What do you think of this? And, you know, that's what gets me excited. And then when you see the people get the results, like Kyle Davey in Canada, the guy is killing it.
Yeah. He's hustling. He's going to out hustle you, I think.
he damn well. I mean,
that's awesome.
$1,500 he averages bare minimum.
Jesus.
And that's for a couple hours a week. His best month is five grand profit. Wow. Just from furniture.
Just from furniture.
Just from furniture. That's his thing.
Is he doing anything or is he just buying furniture?
He's buying it and he says he's, you know, refinishes some of it. So he probably sands some of it down and puts some type of nice stain or a paint on it. But that's all it takes. Like, you know, if he bought I was talking to him one day and he'll buy like a nice dresser, put an hour's worth of work on it. He got the dresser for $25 and he'll sell it for $350.
Wow.
Like that's the opportunity that's there. That's, you know, for me, I'm not big into furniture really. I'm looking for like antique collector's items that are smaller. But like I bought what did I buy? Oh, I bought a chess set at an estate sale for $90, which I normally wouldn't spend that much on one item. but I knew what it was worth. And I was like, yeah, I'll spend the 90. Here, take my money really fast. And I sold it for $327.
Wow. That's, man, like triple your return. Like,
yeah. All
right, so the coin shop, was it just coins or was it like a pawn shop too?
So I actually worked for a coin auctioning company. It was an online company. So we had the coins. We took the pictures and stuff like that. So it wasn't, it was run out of their basement. So it wasn't, there was no storefront or anything.
Right.
So if there was coins that didn't sell in the auction, I could buy them off them for their dealer cost. And then I would just list them elsewhere.
Gotcha.
They had their own auctioning website and everything. I was like, I don't want to go through all that.
So if you're like at a yard sale or something and you see a bunch of like old coins that somebody's got, would you recognize like based on the year and all that stuff, like the ones that are like a higher content silver, like pre-World War II stuff tends to be higher content of like real metal.
Yeah. So any quarters, dimes, that are 1964 and older, have silver in them. I can still, like, when you get into like the coins, especially if like the Peace dollars and the Morgan silver dollars and certain pennies and stuff, there's all these things that they call key dates, are the ones that have that are more rare. So if I came across like a Morgan silver dollar and I looked at the year, I could probably remember which ones are key dates, but like I haven't been in that business for 3 or 4 months, so you kind of just forget about it. But it's very easy to look up. I don't see coins much because coins are, there's a lot of coin collectors out there. I don't think people realize it's a $1 billion industry.
And the doomsday preppers have kind of gone after those old silver coins because they think that's like the currency of the future. So
yeah,
still waiting for doomsday. You know, but I follow this stuff a little bit. I started looking into like the old coins. I wanted to collect silver, and I just found it's easier just to buy silver. So
yeah, I got here.
I'm an affiliate. This is not an affiliate, but apmex.com. People ask me all the time, how do you buy silver? I'm like, well, I just Google it.
But, I know. I buy off AppMex and JM Bullion.
I was just talking about it. APMEX. Yeah,
I do. I get some of them graded as well.
Well, this specific one is actually the John Wick coin. It's not gold, though, because that's a lot of money. But it's a 1 ounce silver coin. It looks exactly like the John Wick coins, which is kind of cool. But you have to pay a little extra for those. I usually just get the APMEX brand ones or the, what are those normal ones, the Eagles?
Yeah, silver. That's what these are, Silver Eagles.
Yeah, those are great. I mean,
I guess I buy them raw, or what they call raw when they're not in a protective graded case, or I buy them professionally graded. But sometimes if I get them graded, I don't buy them off AppMex. I'll buy them off eBay because they're cheaper.
Well, that's an interesting idea.
You can compare prices, but sometimes you can get them for cheaper off reputable dealers off eBay. Yeah. So
it's for all you Bitcoin people out there, it's a good measure of storing wealth over time. Like silver tends to be worth the same no matter what. So if you're worried about inflation or maybe the Fed cutting rates like they did yesterday, September 18th, then silver and gold is a good way to kind of protect your wealth. So I don't buy a ton of it, but like maybe 5% of my money, if I'll throw a little bit into it and just toss it in a safe.
Yeah. My dad is the one that really talked a lot about gold and silver. And so that's why I started buying. I don't buy as much gold. I buy more silver than anything.
Gold's for
my dad's a super smart guy. You know, it's something where he's bought a substantial amount, which makes me wonder what his net worth is.
Wow. Yeah.
But he's just a smart guy. He spreads out his investments. He doesn't put everything into one thing. That's why he just, I believe, completed his citizenship process for Paraguay in South America. So he's like, shit ever hits the fan, I can just leave.
Why Paraguay?
because it's one of the happiest places to live.
Really? That's cool.
It's not necessarily the prettiest place in South America to live, but like the culture, and it's very cheap. And actually your ROI on money is very high there. His investments there do extremely well.
Yeah.
Extremely well.
I can imagine. Yeah. Does he speak Spanish?
He takes Spanish classes, so he probably speaks a little bit. It's probably not very good, but I mean, he's 60. He'll be 62 this year.
That's awesome.
So he's been taking Spanish classes for past 5 or 6 years, I think.
Man, I've been taking Duolingo and hanging out with all these kids, seeing all these kids coming from Spanish-speaking countries. I'm brushing up on my Spanish.
Yeah,
this country's changing a little bit, and that's you know, some people get kind of bummed out by it. They start talking about how things used to be. Like, look, whatever it was, it's going to change. So, you know, either roll with the changes or get out of the way. But it's happening. And
I think the biggest thing is things are changing. Why I like going to other countries because I get to experience culture, and I don't feel like we have a culture here. I mean, yeah, in a sense, in some areas you have some type of culture, but like,
we don't have like the deep rooted culture that other nations have, which I think is really interesting.
Right.
You know,
it's like, and it's constantly changing, and it,
yeah. We have pop culture. It's always flash in the pan. Yeah. But yeah. No, I'm trying to learn my Spanish. I think it's neat. It's another, you know, opportunity to talk to people. I have no problem learning it. Well, I mean, aside from it being kind of difficult.
Yeah.
But I use Duolingo on my phone like 5 minutes a day. It's awesome. It's a great way to learn something. I'm trying to learn Greek too, but that's been like unbelievably hard to tap into.
I want to, I need to brush up on Spanish. I haven't touched it in a long time. And then I want to get into like, I'm part Italian and I would love to just learn Italian.
Oh, that's a good one. Cause Spanish and Italian are pretty similar. Yep. So that works well. Yeah. Well, they're both Latin languages.
Yeah.
That's awesome, man. Yeah. All right. There's another thing I wanted to ask you about. So you tweet this almost every single week, probably every week. You always talk about how if you don't have X amount of dollars,
yeah,
you shouldn't be going out in the weekend drinking. Let's talk about that. So
I actually raise it based on I used to, when I first started saying it, it was $1,000. And the reason why I started saying $1,000 is like, if you don't have $1,000, like one financial minor emergency can really screw you. Yeah.
I think that's good if you live in like, you know, bumfuck Arkansas. $1,000 will probably get you through a month.
Yeah. So like $1,000 and no consumer debt puts you in the top 10% in the world financially, which is insane to think about, but it's true. Because you think about, there's a lot of really poor countries, so $1,000 would be a lot of money.
Yeah.
But if you don't have consumer debt and you have $1,000 to your name, you're top 10% financially in the world.
I was taught this 9 years ago in school, so take that for what it's worth. But 50% of the world lives on $2 a day.
So yep.
$700 a year.
Yeah, it's insane.
Yeah. Meaning they don't eat meat because they can't afford it.
Right. So there's that. And then it's slowly grown. Then I used to say 2,000. Then I used to say 5,000. Now I say 10,000. It's kind of grown as, I don't mean it to sound derogatory, which some people get butthurt over it. And they're like, I'll do what I want with my life. You know?
All right.
And I'm like, I mean, that's fine. Like you can do what you want with your life. But it's, I do it as more of a sense of motivation because I realized that, especially when I was in my mid 20s, you know, I go out on the weekends only to wake up or, you know, Sunday night, just dread Monday and realize like,
yeah,
I'm just living paycheck to paycheck. What the hell am I doing?
Yeah.
Like, okay, cool. I got a few beers.
Yeah.
You know, like what?
We're both old. How many of those nights were that memorable? Like maybe a couple, but most of them were, you know?
And I think people get this misconception when I said that, like, so you just hustle 24/7, like, absolutely not. No way. That's not what I'm saying. That's the people who don't know, who don't understand my type of content, and that's fine.
Yeah.
But like people know that, like, all right, you know, it's more of a motivation thing. Like, hey, if I bust my butt for a couple months and I can put away that $5,000, that $10,000, or I can pay off my debt, maybe then I'm like, oh, I'll take a weekend off. And what I mean by that is, you know, I never want to take a full weekend off unless I'm on vacation because I build up this momentum during the week working on some type of project or something. And I don't want it to just not do anything for 2 days.
Yeah.
Just because. And what helps now is because I coach and we're about to start Saturday practices, I'll never have a weekend off for a while until Thanksgiving and then one for Christmas. And then I won't have a weekend off until May.
Yeah. So, no, there's a lot of truth to that. Cause like I recently went on, it was actually a work trip, I guess, really, but I went and saw some friends and for a couple of days, just kind of drank and watched football and ate like shit. And then I came back and like, it took me a few days to kind of get back into my normal routine. I felt off. I knew like I need to do this stuff. I'm like, man, I don't feel right. I know it's because I was drinking. I know it's because I was eating junk food. And you know, most people do that every weekend though. That's why they hate Mondays, because they're still like trying to adjust.
It's Mondays and they hate their job, and that's something that, you know, I've been there, and really it you have to take this step of changing your mentality, which isn't, I think it's one of the hardest things to do is changing your mentality. But if you can successfully change your mentality, even if it's like a little mindset shift, a little bit each day, that 1% of getting better just mentally, it's going to make a huge difference. Like I used to dread going to my job on Mondays and stuff. And, you know, even before I got let go, I was like, you know what, screw it, man. I'm learning something. I can learn something from this and I can leverage it to my advantage. And that's what I've been doing. So like,
yeah, that was always my biggest fear. If you're ever in a job where you're not learning something, you got to start looking for something else to do as fast as possible. It's not about the money. It's about constantly like upping your skill set.
Yeah.
But and like, people get stuck in these jobs doing the same shit over and over again. It's like, no wonder you hate it. Start, you know, brush up your resume, start being more energetic, just be positive, talking to people. Like, you'd be amazed at just, you know, where you're at. I mean, you might just be talking to somebody and the way you carry yourself, the way you dress, the way you talk, I've had a guy offer me a job. I was at a bar ordering a beer and it wasn't like a bullshit job. It was like working for Edward Jones. And the guy, I'm like, why do you want to offer me a job? You don't even know me. He goes, I can just tell by the way you talk, you can talk to people. All right. You know, but I turned it down, but
yeah, you know, and this is between that tweet that I send out every Friday and then what gets brought up on occasion is I got a lot of crap for, when I tweeted out, I'd rather make $50,000 for myself than $100,000 salary.
Yeah, I saw that. I was really interested to see the comments and I knew they were going to,
they were going to come in. A lot of people agreed because they understand, but people are like, that's the most idiot. They would quote tweet me and like, that's the most stupidest thing. This side of Twitter is so stupid, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, definitely missed the point.
Right.
Because my income is scalable, whereas your $100,000 salary job is not. I can own my time. I don't have to ask for permission. You have to ask for permission. There's nothing, and this is not to take a shot at people who work jobs, because I think jobs are essential. If you love your job, fantastic. Is entrepreneurship or starting your own business or whatever it be for everyone? Absolutely not. There always has to be employees for this stuff to work. But to say you're stupid for wanting $50,000 over $100,000, so you're letting the idea of $100,000 control your time. And if you're okay with that, fine. But I don't know many people who are okay with working 50, 60 hours a week for 100K plus, you know, their commute. Say, yeah, it was worth it. Yeah, you make 100K, but are you really enjoying life?
Yeah.
I enjoy my schedule. I don't make 100K yet. I'm getting close. But, you know, this is like me waking up, being able to do like a podcast like this. I don't have anywhere to be. I got a few things I got to take care of today. I'm going to hit the gym. I'm going to jump on a call with Paul Dominic later. Like, this is, you know.
He's a talker, man. You'll burn up your afternoon if you let him. I love you, Paul.
So it's like, this is my schedule, and I own my income.
Yeah,
so
autonomy is huge. It's such a hard thing to get. But if you can get any semblance of it, it just changes your life so much.
Yeah.
Yeah, and there's nothing wrong with the typical job, but some people just aren't wired that way. And the reason why it's okay to say that is like there's opportunities for you to go out and you know, you can earn these side incomes. You can go out and find a different job. There's a million things to do. The one thing, though, like this online hustling shit, it's not for everyone. It's not easy. It takes a lot of work to get started. But
well, it's the same way with building a following, you know? Yeah. People are like, oh, you just tweet some actionable advice and that's it. I'm like, you don't understand, like,
yeah,
I had this vision of building a following so I could make a positive impact and, you know, maybe sell something and, you know, connect with people. It's not like something it's like, oh, I spend 5 minutes a day on. It's like, I'm on there a lot.
Yeah, you know? You're on there a ton. Yeah.
And it's something where I see the value because I've monetized my following in a sense, or, you know, I'm working with people directly that I've met through Twitter. So I don't have a problem spending time on there, reviewing content, answering questions, putting out my own content. That doesn't bother me. It's the people, but I'm using my time to leverage for my financial advantage or for my networking or for future businesses. Whereas some people are just spending hours and hours just mindlessly scrolling. And that's the difference. They're like, well, you spend a lot of time on there. I'm like, yeah, but Twitter has become kind of like an asset to me.
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny. There's like stages to it. So when you first start, you kind of do spend most of your time on the feed, just kind of scrolling through it. And you have to, it's kind of like learn how it works, see what works for other people. But like, I don't spend a lot of time on the timeline. I scroll through it a couple times a day, just a little bit, trying to catch up with what's going on. But most of my time on Twitter is me writing stuff, checking my DMs, talking to people through the DMs. And I try to reply to I can't reply to everyone anymore, but I try to reply to every notification I get. I do reply to all my DMs. Unless you're just a straight up asshole.
Right.
But I don't, you think that with the name of Patimonis, I catch a lot of shit. Like, and I do occasionally, but man, like 99% of my interactions with people are great. It's kind of amazing how nice people are and how awesome everyone is. And the whole idea that there's like a lot of assholes online, it definitely gets blown out of proportion. They're a loud minority.
Well, I think there are a lot of assholes online, but they're not really on this side of Twitter.
Maybe that's the issue. Yeah.
I think because people know, if they jump on this side of Twitter and they see what other people are doing, they're like, okay, well, these people are actually trying to make a difference. So maybe I should keep my pie hole shut.
That's
otherwise,
probably right.
You know, you'll have, you know, if you get into politics, that's where all the people come out.
God.
Why I don't do, that's why I don't do politics. It's not my thing.
I'll lose to the Russian bots.
Yeah, I could really give one single crap about politics. I don't care.
Yeah, I think once you kind of get your life in order, you realize how little it matters. It's just, it's not that big of a deal.
I tell people this, and it's kind of sad, but I'm like, if you're ever having a bad day, I want you to go to Donald Trump's timeline, go to his comment on his tweet and just see how angry people are with, they claim to be angry at him, but they're really unhappy with their life.
Yeah. I think there's a lot of truth to that. Yeah.
I'm like,
you don't see a lot of super successful people that are angry. They tend to be kind of calm and pretty upbeat usually.
Yeah.
You know, and I've been angry. I've had moments where I've been angry.
Yeah. The angriest times of my life is when I was going through stuff that was in my control, but I chose not to control it.
Yeah. Or couldn't control it.
Right.
Going through my divorce kind of taught me to deal with people that are angry in a different way. I used to kind of meet their anger, and now I kind of look at them like, I don't know what you're going through, but I kind of feel for you because you're probably really upset all the time, and I only have to deal with you today. So
right.
I'll get through this.
That's funny.
Oh man. All right. Let's wrap this up here so we can actually start being productive today. I guess you could take this one of two ways. You could either take it towards flipping or towards the self improvement side. You do both, but you know, to guys that are just kind of starting out, I think most people just are really hung up on just the beginning of both of those topics. You know, what do you recommend guys do just to get started?
Honestly, it's just test it out.
Yeah.
Like the big thing is there's so many different things you can do from a fitness standpoint. You can go into CrossFit, you can run, you can just straight up lift, you can, you know, hit intensity training. What, and then you got, like, if you're trying to start a business, you can do a brand, you can do copywriting, you start an agency, You could flip stuff, or from a blog. Do you want a blog? Do you want to do YouTube? Do you want, there's so many options out there.
Yeah.
And my biggest piece of advice is, and it worked for me because for a while I bounced around, is pick one thing and just go all in on it. Give yourself 6 months. 6 months sounds like a lot of time, but it flies by.
Yeah.
Give yourself 6 months, try to do something with it and see where you are. If you're not happy 6 months from now, you've made zero progress. You didn't, now you actually have to put in the work. You can't just say, oh, I've been at it 6 months and haven't done shit with it. That right. doesn't work. Just go at it for 6 months. Give yourself 15, 20 minutes a day, 30 minutes a day, maybe an hour if you got it, and do that, whatever it is, and see where you're at. I think I say it all the time. People overestimate what can be accomplished in a week, but underestimate what they can do in a year.
Definitely.
So that's the thing, whether it's going to the gym or eating better or trying to get, you know, traffic to your blog or starting a photography Instagram, you know, whatever it is, just give yourself 6 months of being consistent. That's what it comes down to. We hear everyone's like, oh, everyone says consistency is key. It's an echo chamber. I'm like, damn right it is. I mean,
it's because it works.
Yeah, it's because it works. You know, yeah. I'm not going to stop saying it. Yeah, does it get old saying sometimes? But that's exactly what I needed to hear for me to get started.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah,
it worked for me. I, after seeing it enough, I was like, all right, enough is enough. I need to start doing it.
Most people won't consistently do it for 6 months. So the competition's not as much as
oh God, there is no guys, there is no competition.
There anyone really isn't.
To this, there is no competition is so low, you trip over it. Like, it's ridiculous.
Yeah, and you can definitely find some weirder niches out there where you can fit in even easier. But yeah, I the blog that I started, I was kind of just blown away. The first day I put it up, I had 3 hits. I was like, huh, people actually look at this. And that was probably one of the hits. But, you know, it encouraged me. And then the next day there was 7. And I was like, all right, this is going to work. I believed in it right then. And it was like such small amount of traffic for months. And then right around that 6 month mark, it started taking off. And this year, so I started the website back in like, I think June of last year, but with the exception of 1 month, every single month this year, I've had more traffic than ever on my website. It just keeps growing. And it's because I consistently write, maybe with the exception of last month where I kind of took a break, but for the most part, I've been consistent. And that's the key, man. Most people just don't stick with stuff.
That's crazy. It's, I think about when I released the course and I thought, you know, we'll see what happens,
yeah.
You know, and you get that first sale that comes through and you're like, oh man. And then I got a couple the first day and it was just the people on the email list.
That's a
like,
good start.
This is sweet.
Yeah.
And then when you have your first $1,000 day, you're like, oh my God, this is insane.
It's a crazy amount of money. Yeah,
it is. And you know, and I think that's another thing people got to take in consideration, you know, whether it's, you're looking for some type of financial results in whatever you're trying to accomplish. I don't compare myself to other people. Are there kids that are 20 years old making way more money than me? Hell yeah. And I'm happy for them. That's fantastic. I'm happy for them, but I'm doing me. I'm worried about me and how I can scale. So I'm going to work at the pace that I'm comfortable with. I'm not going to compare myself to the Nate Schmidt who's making stupid amounts of money to the, to Andy, who's consistently making whatever he's making. Like, those are all great guys and I love them and it's fun watching them grow, but that's not me. And they went into a different niche. So I can't compare my niche and what I'm doing
right
to them. And
I wasn't prepared for drop shipping. I didn't expect it to take off.
I did a Periscope for the other day on why I haven't really gone full e-com. I know I make money online. I make money online, but I haven't gone into the whole e-com copywriting thing. It's
morbid. Let me be clear on this since I don't have a Series 7. This is not a recommendation, but I decided instead of going into drop shipping to buy stock in Shopify. So it seems like less work.
Right. Yeah. So I just, you know, I had this thing and I was like, it wasn't like the entry to business was hard, but I was like, I'm not necessarily interested in it. So I just found something I was interested in. And, you know, yeah. I'm actually predicting that in 3 to 4 months, it'll be consistently five figures, not passive. I'll make five figures a month from it.
Yeah.
But down the road, and I won't reveal, I'll reveal it as it comes into play. I don't want to put my foot in my mouth, but down the road, I'm hoping in 3 to 4 years, I have this idea, this business plan that's slowly putting itself in motion to where I can step back and have 10,000, 15,000, maybe 20,000 passive when it's all said and done.
That's a dream, which man.
It's a dream. And, you know, yeah. Some people want to make $50,000 a month. And if that happens for me one day, cool. But
yeah. You know,
the type of lifestyle I want, I don't need that.
Yeah.
And that's the cool thing. Some people want to have, you know, drive the Lamborghinis, or they want to go to Bali, or they want to go to Hawaii, or, you know, I want to do that stuff. Sure. Once in a while. But that's not necessarily what I'm excited about in life. I honestly like spending time with my wife. I like coaching, and I want to be away from everyone. So that lifestyle is pretty cheap.
Yeah. So I like that.
Put as much money away as I can for when that next recession hits, going to buy some stuff super cheap, yep. Get the deals on. And then it'll be pretty much like arbitrage in a long-term way. When it price goes up, I can sell it. And I say sayonara to everyone.
That sounds awesome. No, I think that's a lot of good advice. So, yeah. Anything else you want to add to that? Cause I think we had a lot of really big topics here, man.
Now, I'd like to say, pick something for 6 months and go after it. Don't compare your results to other people, because the people Definitely. You're comparing to have been doing it longer.
Yeah, I like that.
And you think about it, everyone started with one sale.
Yeah.
They started with one hit on their blog. They started with one follower and this and that. It all started at the beginning, and people don't talk about it enough. It started yeah. with this. It started with one sale, and you get one sale, you fail. You get two sales, you fail. You get 10 sales, you got to start all over because it's now died out.
Yeah.
And then try something new.
Once you start doing something, find other people that are like kind of in the same area as you, same niche, and then the same like level. So like if you've been doing it for 3 months, find somebody that's been doing it for 3 months and just reach out to them, talk to them, because you're going to have the same issues and you can like bounce ideas off of each other.
Oh, and the only other big piece of advice that's helped me is, you get value on the timeline on Twitter, but the real magic happens in the DMs.
Yeah.
That's where we really connected.
Yeah.
That's where we connect with a lot of people. That's where, you know, I get advice from people, or I get questions answered, and, you know, people ask me questions and stuff like that. And, you know, being able to interact with people, not just on the timeline, but in a message, is pretty cool.
Yeah. Definitely, man. It's a game changer when you start realizing that that's the real secret to Twitter.
Yeah.
There's a lot more beneath the surface that people don't see.
Right.
Cool, man. Hey, that was a great time, man. Joe, thank you so much for coming on. I really enjoyed talking with you, as always.
No, and, man, I appreciate the invite. I was pumped to do it. And yeah, man.
Awesome. Just, so,
yeah.
Coach Joe Hart on Twitter. Where else can people find you?
I got an Instagram I launched. I had an old one, but you can find me at @_coach_Joe.
@_coach_Joe. Sounds good. All right. This is Ryan Feldman with the Path to Manliness podcast, signing off. If you enjoyed this episode of the Path to Manliness podcast, be sure to write us a review. That way we can reach more men that are lost and need direction in their life. And if you feel that you are lost and you need direction in your life, or you simply are looking for brotherhood, a sense of belonging, a place where you can be a man, a traditional man, and be around other men who are motivated and working to build something themselves, check out patreon.com/pathtomanliness to gain access to the private Discord server,
where you can connect with other highly motivated individuals.